dismissing the idea. It would be a mistake far worse than a glass of night wine. But Evelyn seemed to have read his thoughts and was already sauntering across the room. He felt the caress of her magic. He should have stopped her. Really, he should, but the warmth that rubbed up against him soothed something inside him. That part of him that had started pacing and prowling the first day the girl opened his bathroom door dressed in nothing but a towel. A towel, for God's sake. Like any man in his right mind could have resisted that. Hart had resisted, though. It had taken a good long walk and two stiff drinks before the show that day, but he hadn't gone back to his apartment. Not until he knew Esta was asleep. And he'd resist Evelyn, too, because nothing good could come from leading on a siren.
"Did you need something?"
he asked, studying himself in the mirror. He took the pot of coal and the small brush and started to dab it under his eyes, but his hands were shaking and he smudged it. Hart cursed under his breath.
"Let me,"
Evelyn said, taking the brush from his fingertips. She settled herself on his lap, and before he could stop her, she was brushing at the smudged coal with her fingertip. At each gentle tap, 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 tiny sparks of warmth began to relax him. This close, he realized her eyes were the most amazing shade of blue, like the open seas, like freedom and possibility. Her red mouth pulled up as she took the brush and gently applied the coal to the edge of his eyes. As she worked, he felt more relaxed than he had in days, in weeks. The soft weight of her on his lap felt like an anchor in a stormy port. When she was done, she gave his left eye one last smudge with the pad of her thumb, and he couldn't have stopped himself if he wanted to. A moment later, their mouths tangled. She tasted like wine, he thought vaguely, as he pulled her closer, desperate for more of her. And more, as their mouths mashed in a fit of heat and impatient fury. It was like he was drowning and she was air, and he couldn't get enough of it, of her. He barely heard the door open. He was only faintly conscious of someone entering the room.
"Well, this is a pretty picture,"
a voice said, somewhere on the edges of his consciousness, but he ignored it and dived deeper into Evelyn's kiss. It wasn't until Evelyn was ripped from his lap and he sat gasping for air that he comprehended it was Esta who'd come in. She had Evelyn by the hair and was dragging her out of the room, and all Hart could do was sit and stare mutely.
"Bitch," she said, tossing Evelyn out of the room. "You come near him again, and it'll be your last time."
"You and what army is going to stop me?" Evelyn sneered.
"I'll leave that to Dolph Saunders."
"Dolph Saunders?"
Evelyn looked suddenly uneasy.
"We understand each other, then,"
Esta said, laying on her false accent thick.
"I understand fine," Evelyn sneered.
"You're going to regret this."
Esta didn't bother to respond, simply slammed the door in Evelyn's face. Then she turned to Hart, her golden eyes on fire.
"You have something on your face," she said, taking the glass of water on his dressing table and, without any warning, tossing it directly in his face.
He sputtered in surprise.
"What? Oh, save it. You're lucky I came when I did." She crossed her arms. "I can't believe you fell for her."
"I don't answer to you,"
he snapped, feeling more uneasy than angry, but inside he was a ball of panic and fury. What the hell just happened?
"After that little display, maybe you should. Lord knows you can't take care of yourself."
She shook her head. "There's enough magic in the air here to suffocate a person."
"Magic?"
he asked, stunned. His mind still hadn't caught up to what was happening, what had happened. Esta stared at him like she was waiting for him to put the pieces together. Then he felt it. Evelyn's affinity was still snaking through the room like opium smoke, curling about him, still calling to him. Shit. Right when he most needed to keep his wits about him, he was losing his damn mind instead. Turning back to the mirror, he saw for the first time the mess he was. The dark streaks running beneath his eyes from the water, the red ringing his mouth like one of Barnum's clowns.
No wonder Esta looked like she wanted to kill him. He wanted to kill himself when he thought about how stupid he'd been to let Evelyn touch him.
You're welcome, she said.
What are you doing here anyway?
He asked, taking his frustration out on her.
You've been avoiding me, she said,
a furrow between her eyes.
You never came back to your apartment last night.
You were already asleep.
Hart tried wiping the red from his mouth.
You weren't there this morning, she pressed.
I left early.
Like I said, you're avoiding me. You promised Dolph you'd help get Jack, she pressed.
You made a deal.
But he'd had enough of women for one day.
Dolph can go hang.
You don't get it, do you? She snapped. People are disappearing. Tilly is dead.
Her voice broke at the admission.
Dead?
He hadn't realized.
I knew she was hurt, but
she's gone.
Esta's shoulders sagged, and it seemed like all the fire in her had faded.
When?
A couple of days ago. Before Dolph sent me.
I'm sorry, he said softly.
Are you really?
She asked, her voice flat, cold. He didn't have an answer for that.
This thing we're doing, it's bigger than Dolph, bigger than either of us. I don't care what you think about me or how angry you are that you're stuck with me. This isn't exactly a picnic for me either, you know. But you need to pull yourself together and get over it. We need to get to work before you lose Jack Grew completely.
She softened her voice. Or before anyone else has to die. Her words hit him like a slap, but he shoved away the pang of guilt he felt when he saw the sadness in her eyes. She wasn't some innocent in this, whatever she might pretend. She was there because Dolph Saunders had penned him into a corner. But he knew that wasn't the only reason.
That's a nice speech. But tell me something, Esta. Why are you really here?
Her eyes went suddenly wary.
I don't know what you mean.
Dolph sent me to watch you. Why else would I be here?
You tell me.
Who's the old man?
He asked, taking a step toward her.
What?
The color drained from her face.
I don't know what you're talking about.
She turned to go, but he grabbed her wrist. He remembered the images he'd seen when he kissed her the last time she was in his dressing room.
I know about the old man with the crutch, in the room lined with books.
How could you possibly know that? She whispered, not bothering to deny it. Her golden eyes were wide with disbelief.
I know you're not only here because of Dolph, he pressed, ignoring her question. You're here for yourself. Because the old man told you to find the magician.
Please, she said, trying to get away from him. You're hurting me.
He saw then how tightly he was grasping her wrist and released her immediately.
I'm sorry,
he said, shaken by the sight of the red mark he'd left on her delicate skin. He took a step back from her as she rubbed her wrist, hating himself for how easily his temper had spiked, how easily he'd become his father's son. When he turned back, her eyes were steady on him, calculating.
You were in my head.
She took a step toward him, closing the distance he'd put between them.
Is that what you do? Climb into people's heads and violate their most private thoughts? Do you have any idea how wrong that is?
He ignored the familiar wave of shame.
You cornered me in my dressing room and lied to Evelyn about who you were. So yeah, I took a look. I needed to protect myself. I needed to see exactly what the game was.
When you kissed me, she realized, raising her fingers to her lips.
Then you should have your answers already.
She lifted her chin, her eyes filled with disgust, and, if he wasn't mistaken, with fear.
It doesn't work like that,
he snapped, hating his own limitations, and hating that what he'd done, what he was, had made her afraid. Just as it had his mother. She huffed out a laugh.
You really expect me to believe that?
She asked. But her voice shook, at odds with her show of confidence.
It's the truth. I only get impressions unless I focus pretty intently. And if you remember, I was a little too distracted to really focus.
He tucked his hands into his pockets.
I saw the old man,
the library, and I heard him say, "Find the magician." That's it. That's all I know.
He didn't look away. Wouldn't back down from this. Who is he, Esther? I need to know why you came for me. I need to know why you're really here.
Her mouth went tight, and for a moment he thought she would continue to lie to him. Finally, she spoke.
"He's my father." Her eyes were steady, even as her voice shook. "Or, rather, he's as close to a father as I ever had. He raised me, trained me to pick locks and lift wallets. He made me who I am."
He studied her, searching for a sign of the lie, but all he found was a sharp pain in her expression that he recognized too well.
"Where is he now?"
"He's dead," she told him, her voice hitching. "Gone." Even through the haze Evelyn had left behind, he felt like a veritable ass.
"I'm sorry. I didn't know."
"Yeah, well," her mouth went tight. "Some affinity you have, isn't it?"
Hart ignored the insult. "If he's dead, why did you still come to find the magician?"
Esther licked her lips.
"Because he told me to. He could see things. He had an affinity for knowing about things that would happen."
"And why did you need to find me?"
She took a breath, still wrestling with herself, but then she met his eyes.
"He said that you were going to disappear with the book that Dolph's after. And if you do that, the book will never be recovered. You're going to destroy any chance we ever have of defeating the Order."
"And you believed him?" Hart said, suddenly cold.
"He'd never led me wrong before," she said. And that much, at least, sounded like the honest truth.
"For what it's worth, I don't have any plans to destroy the book.
For what it's worth, I wouldn't let you."
She shook her head and let herself out. The room felt strangely empty once Esther was gone, as though she'd taken something vital with her. He looked at his reflection again, the smudges under his eyes, the stain of red that left his lips looking bloodied. Who knew how far Evelyn would have taken things if Esther hadn't interrupted? He owed her for that, even if she'd only done it because Dolph needed him. But he didn't know how he'd ever pay her back with anything but betrayal.
The glass casket. Hart was still avoiding her. He always came back to the apartment late, long after she was asleep, and he would be gone before she awoke every morning. After she'd given everything away in his dressing room, maybe that was safer. She'd been cornered and she'd acted on instinct. Too bad her instincts tended to get her in trouble. Like what happened with Logan. But with every day that passed, the news clipping remained stubborn in its insistence that Dolph Saunders was going to die. Enough was enough. She had a job to do. She needed that book, and she needed Ishtar's key. And Dolph was sure they couldn't do anything without Hart, which meant she needed him, too. He couldn't avoid her forever. After breakfast, she set off for the theater to confront him, but it wasn't Hart she found when she arrived. The first person she ran into was the red-haired harpy.
"You're back," Evelyn said, sounding like she meant go away.
"Of course. I'll be around quite a lot from now on,"
Esther said in her falsely accented voice as she headed toward Hart's dressing room.
"He isn't there,"
the woman called, a mocking note in her voice.
"He's down below."
Straightening her spine, Esther gave Evelyn a cold smile before she turned and made her way through the maze of the backstage hallways and then down a staircase to a damp-smelling room beneath the theater. She thought she heard water and wondered if the theater wasn't built over one of the hidden rivers in the city. Just ahead there was a light, and as she moved toward it, she heard a familiar voice letting out a string of curses.
"Hart?"
she called, navigating through the cluttered storage area until she came to where he was working. The magician had pulled a vanishing act, because the boy before her could have been any factory worker, any laborer in the city. He was dressed in worn brown pants, held up only by a pair of suspenders. They sagged low on his narrow hips, and his shoulders and arms were bare beneath his sleeveless shirt, which was damp with sweat. He looked more unbuttoned and human than she'd ever seen him. Then he flipped the visor up on the welding mask and ruined the effect.
Get in,
he said, pointing to the table where the strange, coffin-like tank he'd been working on was sitting. His eyes were a little wild. She took a step back.
I mean it, get in. I need to see if this will fit you.
Why? She asked suspiciously. Looking for new and inventive ways to dispose of my body?
The thought did cross my mind once or twice,
he said dryly. She bit back a laugh. Nice of you to spring for a glass coffin. Wood is so 1899. He glared at her, scratching his chin.
It's not a coffin, it's a... Wait. Maybe you're right.
I usually am. However hard his eyes were, Esta sensed that he was too excited to really be mad.
We could go with the defying death angle. The glass casket has a nice ring to it, don't you think?
Esta eyed him.
What do you mean, we? You and me. If I'm stuck with you, I'm going to make use of the situation.
I thought you decided on avoiding me, she said, crossing her arms.
Didn't you say we had to get to work?
He said, frowning at her.
I've been getting things ready.
She narrowed her eyes at him, not trusting the excitement in his expression. Ready for what?
We're going to run the lost heir on Jack.
Am I supposed to know what that means? He frowned.
It's a con game. If it works, Jack's going to believe that we have something he'd do anything to get.
You're going to be the lost heir. What exactly am I the heir of? She asked, walking over to run the tips of her gloved fingers against the smooth glass.
You, sweetheart, just happen to be the long-lost, illegitimate daughter of Baron Franz von Filosik, who was rumored to have found the secret to the transmutation of basic elements before his untimely death.
Is that an actual person?
Of course it is.
He paused.
Wasn't that all part of Dolph's plan? I figured that's why you introduced yourself to Evelyn with that name.
She glanced up from the glass box, trying to hide her surprise. After all, she'd been improvising about who she was that day in the dressing room. She'd given her own name, not one Dolph had invented. Not that Hart needed to know that. Of course it was the plan, she said, trying to stay in control of the situation. Who was he, this Baron von Filosik? What did he do?
Dolph didn't explain it.
He just gave me the name, she lied.
Hart gave her a knowing look. Yeah, that sounds exactly like something he'd do.
Esta relaxed a little with his acceptance of her story, but she couldn't help but wonder if the professor had known somehow that the name he'd picked after he found her in the park would come in handy one day. Well, she pressed, if this con is going to work, I should know my own fictional father.
You will. But for now, all you need to know is that the transmutation of the elements is basically the holy grail for most alchemists. The good Baron died in a fire some years back, along with all his secrets. Or so people thought. He waggled his eyebrows at her. But now, his secret daughter has returned to continue her father's work, and she's lonely and afraid, and could use a protector.
She rolled her eyes at him. And that's supposed to be me? She asked, doubtful.
If you can pull it off, yes, he told her. As far as Jack Grew's concerned, you've recently shown up in town in need of help from an old friend.
That would be me. We just have to make him believe that it would be better if he were the one you relied on. After all, you'd be very grateful to such a person, wouldn't you? You might even be willing to share your father's secrets with that person. So we make Jack believe that I have my fake father's secret files,
and we make him think you're vulnerable enough to give them up with the right encouragement. In this case, an introduction at Khafra Hall.
You really think that will work?
It's what we have.
Which is such a ringing endorsement.
Look, Jack's been interested in my act for months now, but he's like the rest of them. He believes that his family's money and status makes us fundamentally different.
That's what will catch him.
He won't be able to accept that you would choose me over him if you had the option.
He's going to rescue me from you, she realized, appreciating the simplicity of trapping Jack with his own greed and narrow-mindedness.
That's the basic idea.
He'll have to prove himself to you somehow, and that's what will trap him. But what does this death trap have to do with me being the daughter of some dead baron?
You have to earn your keep somehow, he told her, the corner of his mouth kicking up wryly.
So you're helping me with my demonstrations.
I don't know, she hedged, eyeing the box. That doesn't really seem necessary.
It's all part of the con. He ran a hand over the glass case. That disappearing thing you did was a great effect. We're going to build on it to hook Jack into believing that you have secrets that could help him with some experiments he's been doing.
What kind of experiments?
No idea, Hart admitted. I haven't been able to get him to tell me yet. Like I said, he still doesn't completely trust me. He's been using me for information, but still keeping me at arm's length. He glanced back in the direction of the stairwell, as though checking to make sure no one else could hear.
So how did you do it? He whispered. The disappearing thing. I'm going to need to know what I'm working with.
I'd be happy to, she leaned in. Right after you tell me what you're really planning to do with the book. Because I don't believe for a second you really plan to hand it over to Dolph.
He pulled back, his eyes wary.
Or we can work around it.
She gave him a shrug.
If you insist.
They stared at each other for a moment, neither wanting to be the first to flinch, neither wanting to be the one who gave up any ground. To Esther's relief, his excitement to show her the glass casket won out.
Okay, then. Come take a look at what I've done here. I want you to see how it works.
He closed the hinged lid and then opened it to show her how smoothly it moved. When he depressed a hidden lever at the end of the case, the glass lid slid silently free of the frame, like a car window rolling down.
I've been working on this for a while, but I finally figured it out.
Then he grinned. Esther's stomach did an unexpected and definitely unwanted flip. When his mouth turned up like that, into a real smile instead of the one he pasted onto that smug face of his on stage, he looked almost boyish. Almost like someone she'd like to know, if she wasn't who she was and he wasn't who he was, if he hadn't just all but admitted he was making his own plans. But they were who they were, and she couldn't let herself forget that he was the one she was supposed to stop. If he betrayed the team, it would mean more than the loss of the book. But now it might also mean the death of Dolph Saunders. What would happen to his crew? To all the people who depended on him if he were gone? What chance would any of them have against the viciousness of the city and the order that controlled it without Dolph to lead them and to protect them?
You made this? She asked,
stepping around so that the glass box was between them.
Yeah, I've been working on the idea for a while. I was going to do it myself, but with your... whatever it is you do, I think it'll be better.
He slid the glass back into place and closed the lid.
Most people do this effect behind a screen or with a box where no one can see what the girl is doing.
But with you, we can do something new. He ran his hand over the glass coffin.
The girl, that'll be you, will disappear right before the audience's eyes. No mirrors or screens, no capes or hiding. Poof, you'll be gone.
He eyed her.
Assuming, of course, you can manage it.
I can manage it, she said.
But don't you think it's a little risky to have me disappear like that? It'll raise suspicions about how I did it, maybe about who I am.
No, it won't, he said, his gray eyes dancing.
That's the beautiful thing about it. No one will believe you actually disappeared because no one will expect you to have real magic. They expect that everything I do on stage is a trick, an illusion. Half the audience will be telling the other half that they knew how it was done.
Even though she knew he was still up to something. This version of Hart Darrigan was disarming. His face was smudged and his hair was standing up in a riot of loose waves. His clothes were rumpled. And although he was attempting to play things cool, he was practically vibrating with anticipation. It was all 100 times more compelling than anything she'd seen him do on stage. It seemed so authentic. This Hart Darrigan seemed so real. All part of his game, she reminded herself. For all she knew, it was just another con.
Are you going to get in, or what?
Esther hesitated.
You aren't going to trap me in there?
I'm not promising anything, he joked. But when she gave him a doubtful look, he let out an impatient huff. You saw how the mechanism works, didn't you? Then he held out his hands, a challenge in his eyes. Frowning, Esther took his hand and allowed him to help her step up onto the table and into the glass box. It was a tight fit with the bulk of her skirts. Good, he said, looking her over. Now lie down, would you? I need to make sure it's not too long or too short. She barely had enough room for her hands to be at her sides. And there's a small lever by your right toe. It'll take some practice to find. She hit the lever, and he had to jump to catch the glass top from sliding too quickly. You were saying? He scowled at her. And now we close it. But before she could protest, he was already pulling the top down and locking it with a bronze padlock. Fog from her breath started to build on the glass, inches from her nose. Suddenly the air felt too warm, too close. There aren't any air holes, he shouted, his voice muffled by the glass. You'll have to work fast. No air holes? She was going to kill him. Her foot fumbled for the latch but missed the first time. If he doesn't finish me off first, that is. We'll have a cue or something, he was shouting, motioning to the lever near her foot. Some sort of hand motion or signal to... She pulled time around her, slowed the seconds, and depressed the latch. The glass released, and she slid it away from her face, taking a moment to breathe in the cool, musty air of the basement, and allowing the prickle of panic to recede from her skin before she climbed out. Composing herself, she wiped her sweaty palms on her skirts, and then she slid the glass back into place before examining Hart. Nearly frozen mid-word, his eyes gleamed. He loves this. Whatever else he pretended, whatever he'd done or was going to do, she could see that he wasn't pretending his excitement for this new trick, effect, whatever. The point was that he loved it as much as she loved the rush from lifting a fat wallet or hearing the tumblers of a lock click into place. She felt that strange lurch in her stomach, one that she didn't like at all, so she released time and watched Hart sputter mid-sentence. Let you know, oh! His face split into a surprised smile, his stormy eyes lit, unguarded and unaware that he was showing her something new about himself. Yes, that's it exactly! Then he seemed to realize he'd revealed too much. You'll have to wait for my cue, of course, he said, back to his usual arrogance. You don't want to come out too soon and ruin everything. We'll have to... You locked me in an airtight box, she said flatly, interrupting him. His brow furrowed. That's kind of the point. If there's no sense of danger, the audience won't care. You locked me in an airtight box, she said again, enunciating each word through her clenched teeth. Maybe we should add something more, he said, not paying any attention to her outrage. You could have warned me before you locked me in. You should have warned me. He ran a hand through his already mussed hair. You got out, he said, looking at her as though he didn't understand her point. You could have killed me. I didn't, he started to say, but when she stepped toward him, he put his hands up defensively. Okay, you're right. I'm sorry, I should have warned you. Dolph isn't going to like it if I end up dead. You're probably right about that, too. He ducked his head and unlatched the bronze padlock. But other than the almost dying, what do you think? She shrugged, reluctant to give him any credit at all. It'll be okay. Okay, he laughed. No, this will be like nothing anyone has ever seen. If this doesn't convince Jack that you have something he wants, nothing will. This has to work. It will, she said, looking over the glass coffin again. We'll make it work. Together. We just might, he said, his expression changing. Here's to bringing down the order. He held out his hand, his eyes serious. Esther considered all the reasons she shouldn't let him touch her, but in the end she placed her gloved hand in his. He squeezed gently, but the warmth she felt thrum through her hand had nothing to do with the peculiar energy left behind by magic. The atmosphere between them grew thick, charged. She pulled her hand away. Esther, he started, but hesitated as though he didn't quite know what he wanted to say. Before he could figure it out, a voice called from close by.
Hart,
Evelyn said, stepping into the light thrown by his work lamp. The moment broken, he took a step back from Esther, looking suddenly embarrassed or guilty.
Yeah.
He wiped the hand that had just shaken hers on his pants.
Shorty wanted me to let you know you're on in 20.
He sent you down here?
He asked, a frown tugging at his mouth. Evelyn put her hands on her hips.
Is that a problem?
No. Sorry. Thanks for letting me know. I'll be up in a minute.
I'll see you upstairs, she said sweetly,
before giving Esther a pointed glance and then slinking back from wherever she'd come. Esther watched her go, wondering how long Evelyn had been standing in the shadows and how much she'd heard. But if Hart was concerned, he didn't show it.
Look, I've got to get ready for the show, but stick around, would you?
She glanced up at him, surprised. He'd never invited her to stay and watch his show, or to wait for him after, so we can practice again. He finished, tugging at one of his suspenders.
I'm thinking once we work on the timing, I can get a hold of Jack.
It shouldn't take us that long to get it right.
Oh, right,
she said, feeling suddenly stupid. Of course.
Doff would want us to get this going. We've taken long enough.
So you'll wait?
Yeah,
she said, pasting on an encouraging smile.
Absolutely.
After he disappeared up the steps, she let the smile fall from her face and ran her hands along the smooth glass of the box.
It was a good idea. A good effect, she had to admit. It might even be enough to convince Jack Grew that she had something he wanted,
but they couldn't take any chances. The trick needed to be better than good. It needed to be spectacular.
Improvising. Hart had never seen Esther so on edge. After he'd explained how they would run the lost air on Jack, they'd settled into a steady, if not quite comfortable, rhythm as they prepared for the Friday night performance. Everything he'd thrown at her, and it had been plenty, she'd given back to him in turn, and with a smirk on her face that told him she was enjoying herself. But standing in the wings, her apple-green silk gown glinting in the lights from the stage, she was going to chew a hole in her lip while she watched the act before him.
"You'll be fine," he said, resting his hands on her bare shoulders.
He felt her stiffen, but she didn't pull away. Even when he rubbed his thumb gently over the pink scar on her arm, she wouldn't tell him what it was from, but the angry pucker of skin had drawn his attention and his concern.
"Don't,"
she whispered, turning her head back to look at him with a frown. Her honey-colored eyes were serious, and if he wasn't mistaken, scared.
"I wasn't,"
he told her.
"I wouldn't."
She snorted her disbelief at his words, but she didn't pull away, and he realized that he liked the way her skin felt under his fingertips, soft when there had been so little softness in his life for so long. He knew enough not to depend on it, though, because it couldn't last, not with so much standing between them. He had to get out of the city, and for that he had to remember that she was just another thing standing in his way. He dropped his hands from her shoulders.
"Do you think he's out there?"
she asked, peering past the stage into the theater.
"Second box to the right,"
he told her.
"There's no need to be nervous. This is going to work."
"I'm not nervous," she said, tilting her head to the side. "Just ready."
"You'll come on when I give the cue, just as we rehearsed."
I know," she said. "You've gone over this 100 times, 200 times.
But her voice didn't have the usual bite.
"Don't forget to..."
The organ trilled his introduction, and it was too late for any more instructions.
"Just like we practiced. You'll be fine."
She nodded, but there was something in her eyes that worried him.
"Esther, what are you waiting for?"
Shorty hissed.
"That was your cue."
Unable to wait any longer, he gave her what he hoped was a stern but encouraging look, and took the stage.
Word that he was debuting a new effect had gotten out and the seats were nearly full. The audience went gratifyingly silent when he stepped into the spotlight, and when he lifted his arms to salute the crowd, a rumble of applause rolled over him, settling his nerves and steeling his resolve. He worked through his usual bits, and the audience seemed willing enough to watch, because they knew something bigger, better was coming.
"Ladies and gentlemen,"
the words came as easily as the prayers his mother had taught him when he was a boy. But this time, much more was riding on his performance than a good night on stage.
"I have a special treat for you this evening, a new demonstration and a new beauty for you to feast your eyes upon."
He held out his hand as they'd practiced, and Esta glided onto the stage. If she'd been nervous before, there was no sign of it now. She walked like a debutante, like she'd been born to tread the boards. But then, maybe she had. After watching Esta the past few days, he'd come to understand that she was one of the best grifters he'd ever seen. Maybe even better than him.
"May I present to you Miss Esta von Filosik of Rostenburg. I studied under her father, the foremost expert on the transmutation of the elements. He made great breakthroughs in the hermetic sciences before his untimely death. And now, Miss Filosik has come to these shores to share her father's secrets with all of you. Tonight, she will demonstrate her mastery over the powers of the other world by cheating death."
He paused dramatically, letting the crowd's anticipation grow.
"In the glass casket."
Excited murmurs rustled through the crowd. As the assistant rolled the box onto the stage, he chanced a glance in the direction of Jack's box and was relieved to see him leaning forward against the railing of the balcony, watching with clear interest.
"If you would,"
he said, offering Esta his hand as they'd practiced. She hesitated, though, and didn't take it as she was supposed to.
"My dear,"
he said, offering his hand again.
"Oh, I don't know."
She shook her head and took a step back. He offered his hand again and forced the smile to stay put on his face. "This can't be happening. Not again. Not now.
Come, my dear. It's perfectly safe."
A slow smile curved her lips, and he had the sudden feeling that he wasn't going to like what happened next.
"Oh, I bet you say that to all the girls,"
Esta told the audience in her throaty, accented voice as she crossed the stage, ignoring his outstretched hand and turning all his careful planning on its head. He could practically feel the audience's confusion and their amusement. Hushed whispers rustled through the room as they waited to see what the girl would do next and whether he would be able to regain control. Hart Derrigan had survived his mother leaving him, a childhood in the streets he'd rather forget, and working for a boss who thought it was easier to kill people than to talk things over. He'd made a life from keeping his cool in sticky situations, but none of that had managed to prepare him for being in the spotlight, his spotlight, with Jack Grew in the audience and himself completely at her mercy. He was afraid to look in Jack's direction, afraid to see what his reaction would be. This whole con depended on Jack feeling like Hart was real competition, feeling like he had something to prove and someone to beat. She could ruin everything. He'd let himself believe that he'd taken control of the situation, but he'd been as easily conned as any Mark, taken in by a pair of honeyed eyes and pink lips and the soft, clean scent of flowers. He had known she was up to something. Worse, he'd let himself forget that anyone working for Dolph Saunders had to be a snake, and he had the sinking feeling he'd just been bitten. Then something shifted in the audience. The murmuring died a bit as though they wanted to see what would happen next. He hadn't lost them yet. He could still save this.
"Please, if you would simply step into the casket, we can continue our demonstration."
He held out his hand.
"As we planned,"
he said through clenched teeth. She let out a dramatic sigh, raising her hand to the curve of her chest, a move he had no doubt was intentional.
"Oh, all right, darling,"
she said with a wink to the audience.
"But there are easier ways to get rid of me."
Someone in the audience chuckled.
My father always said a handsome face would be the death of me,
Esta said dramatically. Then she shrugged.
I hate when he's right.
Finally, she took his hand and climbed the steps to sit in the glass box.
What are you doing?
He whispered, as he made a show of helping her arrange her skirts. I'm improvising, she told him through her smile. Improvising? He'd show her improvising. Her eyes went wide when she understood what he was about to do, but she didn't have time to stop him before he closed the lid. It was wrong of him. Maybe even a little cruel. He knew she hated to be in there. Through all their practicing, he'd gathered that there was something about being in that small, confined, airless space that made her jittery like nothing else could. They'd worked it out, so he closed the lid at the last possible second. That was before she went off script. He couldn't afford any more of her improvising, so he shut the lid tight, latched on the padlock, and tossed the key into the audience with a flourish. Esta made a good show of it, frantically pounding at the glass to get out. At least, he thought with a twinge of guilt. He hoped it was only a show. He gave the signal for the stagehands to bring out the second part of the trick, a contraption that suspended an iron weight above the glass box by a piece of rope.
Fire. The most volatile of all the elements,
he told the audience as he set off a flare in his hand and used it to light a candle beneath the rope.
If I am not able to call upon my mastery of the other world's powers, the flame will burn through this rope and the weight will fall, crushing the casket and Miss Filosic with it.
The theater was on the edge of their seats, watching the girl struggle against the glass box, watching the candle eat away at the fragile rope, waiting with violent glee to see whether she'd live or die. He picked up his scarlet cape and twirled it over his head. One, over the casket where the girl writhed and slapped at the glass. Two, he closed his eyes and sent up a quick prayer to the god he'd long given up on, that he hadn't overplayed his hand. Then he twirled the cape in front of him, obscuring the audience's view for less than a second as the candle ate through the final bit of rope, just as the weight fell, shattering the glass. Three. A misstep. She took a moment to enjoy Hart's dazed look of relief before she gave the shocked audience her most dazzling smile.
I guess Papa was wrong,
she said, and the audience went wild. She took her time raising one arm, like he'd taught her, to take her bow. The thrill of the crowd's rolling applause sank into her, warming something deep within her. In that moment, she understood Hart a little better. He was staring at her, and, for once, he was speechless. Not that she blamed him. She hadn't exactly warned him about the costume change she'd orchestrated. She'd paid the theater's seamstress, Sela, to create the scrap of a costume she was now wearing, because she'd been watching in the wings for days now, and all that watching had taught her something. It wasn't only wonder and awe that sold an act. A little skin didn't hurt either. Evelyn and her sisters, if that was what they really were, had about as much talent as a trio of alley cats in heat. But they knew when to show a little leg and to give a little tease, and they got the audience's attention every single night. Hart's face was turning an alarming shade of red as she made one last curtsy and took herself off, stage left. She was barely out of the footlights when he came charging behind her. He ripped the robe from the stagehand's grasp and wrapped it around her.
What the hell was that? He asked. And what are you wearing?
Do you like it? She opened the robe to give him a better look. In her own time, the outfit, a corseted top with off-the-shoulder sleeves and a pair of bloomers that came to mid-thigh, would have been laughably modest. The entire thing was made from a gorgeous midnight blue silk and was studded with crystals that glittered in the dim light of the wings like a field of stars. Old-fashioned as it might be, she loved it. Not only was it beautifully made, but after the long skirts and layers of fabric she'd been wearing for weeks now, she felt lighter, more like herself. Hart opened his mouth, but all that came out was a choked sound. He tied the robe back around her again.
she decided to take it as a compliment. He was still sputtering in anger when Evelyn came up to them and wiped at Hart's cheek with her fingertip.
"You got something on your face there."
Then she laughed at him and walked off. He reached up, still wordless, and rubbed where she'd touched. His brows furrowed as he saw the red stain on his fingertips, and when he looked in the small mirror on the wall, he turned an even deeper shade of red.
"You kissed me?"
Esta shrugged. "I thought it would be a nice touch." She hadn't planned it, but when she had pulled the seconds around her and made time go slow, it seemed too easy to simply get herself out of the box and slip the green gown off. He'd been so bossy all afternoon, she couldn't resist playing with him a little, giving him back some of what he'd given her. So she'd left the bright red imprint of her lips on his cheek before she let go of her hold on time. To the audience, it all happened at once. The amazing escape, her metamorphosis into the new outfit, and the mark on his cheek. For them, she'd gone from seconds away from death to victory in a blink.
"You should have cleared it with me,"
he said, rubbing at the red spot and making it worse as he smeared it. "Funny. I've thought that every time you've kissed me. Besides, it worked, didn't it?"
"It doesn't matter if it worked,"
he told her, turning to her with an expression so angry she took a step back. Esta pulled the robe tighter around herself and headed toward Hart's dressing room. She didn't bother to check if he was following her. She didn't need to. She could practically feel him breathing down her neck. She tossed off the robe as she walked into the room. Before she had time to turn around, he'd slammed the door, closing them into the small space alone and away from the prying eyes of the other performers. She turned, her arms crossed, and propped herself against his dressing table, refusing to be intimidated. "What is your problem? Tonight went well, better than well. They loved it."
"This is my act," he said, stalking toward her. "It's my call what happens out there. You don't get to change it without my say-so."
She'd known he'd be a little annoyed, maybe even upset by her not telling him, but she truly hadn't predicted that her little addition to the act would make him so furious. Their almost easy partnership for the last few days had made her forget her position, and she'd miscalculated. Forgotten how different things were between men and women in this time. Hart might have acted more enlightened than most, but he was still a product of his time. Of course, he'd take any adjustment to his act personally. She should have realized. Not that she was going to apologize. The risk had worked, and he was going to have to deal with it. She turned her back to him so that she could use the mirror to take off her stage makeup. His face appeared in the mirror behind her, looming over her shoulder. "I thought after this week..." "Darrigan!" Shorty poked his head through the door before she could finish.
"Good job, kid. That was a hell of a trick you two did out there,"
he said as he came into the room, a cigar clamped between his teeth. He gave Hart a rough thump on the back that seemed to shut him up, and then handed him a slip of paper.
"Message for you,"
he said with another thump on the shoulder, before backing out and closing the door behind him. "What is it?" Esta tried to peer at the message while Hart used his shoulder and his height to keep its contents away from her.
"It's from Jack," Hart said. "He wants to have dinner with us tomorrow night."
She tried not to gloat. Really, she did, but she couldn't help smiling. "You're welcome."
"Don't," he growled, his expression hard. "This didn't happen because of what you did out there. It happened in spite of it."
He waved the paper at her.
"You could have ruined everything."
"But..." Her smile faltered.
"Did you even consider that your little improvisation might not have worked? We hadn't rehearsed it. I've been working for months to get Jack to believe that I am what I say I am. We had one chance for Jack to see you for the first time. One. Any misstep could have ruined all of that."
"I'm sorry," she said, suddenly struck by how impulsive she'd been, how thoughtless.
"You're lucky I don't call this whole thing off," he told her. "I could tell Jack everything I know about you and the Met. I could wash my hands of Dolph Saunders and this whole mess of his."
"No." She stepped toward him and grabbed his arm. "Please, don't."
"Why shouldn't I?"
he said.
"Why shouldn't I wash my hands of the lot of you?
Shame burned her cheeks. And she might as well have been standing in Professor Lachlan's office, listening to him tell her the exact same thing. "Because it's not their fault," she said softly. "Don't punish them for what I did." He studied her, and she could barely breathe while she waited for his answer.
"This is the order we're talking about, Esta. If they find out what we are, if Jack finds out what I am, it's not going to end well. I won't let your carelessness take me down with you. If we're going to do this, I have to be able to trust you to do what you say you're going to do. Otherwise, I'm done. I'm out for good. Damn Dolph and the lot of you."
"You don't have to worry," she promised. "It won't happen again." She forced herself to meet his eyes, hoping that he didn't see the lie there.
"You're sure?"
"Yes," she insisted, praying he would believe her. "You can trust me. At least until the very end." A New Partnership. The Haymarket. Ever since he'd confronted her after their performance, Hart had noticed that Esta was more subdued. Not cowed by any means, but watchful, like she was waiting for something. But as the hack pulled up to their destination, she looked downright nervous. "I'm not going in there," Esta said when she realized where the carriage had stopped. "You should have warned me. I never would have come." "I thought you'd appreciate the surprise," he said, confused by her reaction. "After all, this is where we first met." "You don't understand," she said, trying to tug away from him. "People in there..." She hesitated as though searching for the right word. "They might recognize me. It could ruin everything." Ignoring the stiffness in her posture, he held her out at arm's length and took a moment to look her over. She was wearing the dress he'd picked from the ones she'd bought, or taken. He never knew for sure with her. It was a golden color with beads that caught the light no matter how she moved. Strings of more beads were all that covered her shoulders, and the neckline dipped dramatically to showcase the gentle slope of her chest and the garnet collar that sat around her throat. She looked like a living flame. She'd argued that something more inconspicuous would be better. In the end, though, she'd agreed with him that Jack needed to be impressed by her and had worn the dress. But seeing it in his apartment was different from seeing the gown in the moonlight. And knowing that he'd picked it for her, that she'd willingly worn it for him, was another thing altogether. And he didn't want to think too much about how that made him feel.
"They won't recognize you," he said, giving her a smoldering look meant to tease as much as to assure her. "No one would. Not looking like that."
The compliment had the effect he'd intended, and she snorted, crossing her arms over her chest. "I know a line when I hear one, Darrigan." He met her gaze before he spoke.
"Then you should know that wasn't a line."
She gave him her usual scowl, but her shoulders relaxed a little and she looked more like herself. He took her hand and tucked it through his arm.
"Are you ready?"
"I don't think..."
"This will work. Just stay close and you'll be fine."
He started to lead her toward the Haymarket, but when they were almost to the door, he stopped, remembering something.
"If anything should happen tonight,
you just told me everything would be fine."
"It will be," he assured her. "Whatever you do, though, no magic once we're inside. Corey's security is trained to detect it, and they won't hesitate to act if they sense you using it. You're lucky you got out without them catching you last time."
Esta stopped in her tracks and looked up at him. Her mouth was slightly open, and she was looking at him as though she'd never seen him before.
"You were trying to help me," she said. "That night when we first met, you had a reason for manhandling me, didn't you?"
"I have no idea what you're talking about," he told her.
And before she could press him about it anymore, he led them toward the dance hall's entrance. Inside, the band was playing a ballad. Hart recognized the melody as one of the songs Evelyn belted out on stage each night. He led Esta through the crush of people and around the main floor of the ballroom.
"I want a table upstairs where we can see the whole floor. I don't want to miss Jack when he comes in."
Fastening an aura of ease and charm around him like armor, Hart made his way through the room slowly, knowing exactly how uncomfortable she was with being paraded around and introduced to various people they encountered. She smiled and said all the right things, but every time he stopped to chat with someone, her posture grew more rigid and her smile more strained. He'd been around her long enough now that he was starting to learn the subtle shifts in her mood. Esta might always act as though nothing touched her, but tonight her eyes were giving her away. She was still on edge. Eventually, he found them an empty table at the balcony railing with a clear view of the first floor. Below, the Haymarket was alive with color. Women in brightly colored gowns swirled around the dance floor, while pink-faced men leaned against the central bar, laughing too loud as they held their tumblers of whiskey. Across the table from him, Esta was quiet, watching the room with guarded eyes. After a few minutes of silence, she spoke, startling him from his thoughts.
"You love all of this, don't you?"
"What?" He took his eyes from the door to look at her. She was sitting with her elbows propped on the table, her chin against her folded hands, a question in her eyes.
"The attention. The way so many people know who you are and want to talk with you. You pretend to be indifferent, but underneath you're like a cat with cream."
He shrugged off his discomfort at how clearly she'd seen through him.
"I'm not going to complain," he said. "There are a lot worse ways to spend an evening, like starving in a gutter, or trying to stay clean when the whole world is determined to make you filthy."
"What were you thinking about just now?" she asked, sitting up a little straighter, her eyes focused completely on him now. "Your whole expression just closed up." She was too perceptive by half.
"Nothing," he told her, feigning ignorance about her concern.
It was clear she didn't believe him. She was still staring at him as though he'd give up all his secrets if she were patient enough. But that couldn't happen. He called over a server and ordered a bottle of champagne, avoiding her eyes and her expectations as the waiter poured two glasses.
"To our new partnership," he said with his practiced, pleasant smile as he raised a glass to toast her.
She only watched him with those serious eyes of hers and didn't bother to lift her glass or take a drink.
"It's an impressive mask you wear," she said. "Even knowing it's there, I can barely see a crack."
He placed his glass on the table, untouched as well.
"I'm not sure what you mean," he said stiffly. "I am exactly what I appear to be."
"That's probably more true than you know." Still not taking the champagne, she turned to watch the room below. After a few minutes, he missed her attention and wanted her to turn back, if only to spark at him again. That, at least, was more amusing than this sullen silence. But Esta's attention was on the floor below. She drummed her fingertips softly against the base of her champagne flute, as if waiting for something to happen. Or maybe she was waiting for someone, he thought, with a sudden, unsettling jolt of unwelcome jealousy. It all served to remind him that they weren't really there together by choice. She wasn't really his or even on his side. They were sitting on opposite sides of the board, playing each other in hopes of gaining the same prize. But he had so much more at stake, and if push came to shove, he wouldn't let her be the victor. He stood and held his hand out to her.
"Dance with me," he said, not allowing himself to think about the motivation behind his impulse.
She looked up at him, her eyes betraying her surprise, but she didn't make any move to accept his invitation. Now that he was standing, he felt like an idiot.
"I think our mark arrived," he lied, when he started to fear that she would refuse him and he'd be forced to sit down, humiliated.
"Oh?" Still, she didn't reach for his hand. His neck felt hot. The people at the table next to them laughed at something, probably him, and he had to fight the urge to tug at his collar and adjust the cufflinks at his wrists.
"We should make sure Jack sees us," he pressed.
"Of course," she murmured.
but there was no pleasure or anticipation in her eyes as she finally took his hand and allowed him to lead her down to the dance floor. Hart recognized his mistake almost immediately. He'd never been one for waltzing, usually preferring instead